Welcome to the Cool Tools Show. I'm Mark Frauenfelder, Editor-in-Chief of Cool Tools, a website of tool recommendations written by our readers. You can find us at cool-tools.org. I'm joined by my co-host, Kevin Kelly, founder of Cool Tools. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, it's great to be here.
In each episode of the Cool Tools Show, Kevin and I talk to a guest about some of his or her favorite uncommon and uncommonly good tools they think others should know about. Our guest this week is Jen Schachter. Jen is a multimedia maker and a mastermind of interactive art projects, including a giant light-up sign for the Obama White House, a wooden parking validation robot, and a monumental 3D printed sculpture of Rosie the Riveter. You can find her product reviews in Make Magazine, her epic collaborations with Adam Savage on Tested.com, and her tool manuals and fabrication shops in Baltimore. Hi, Jen. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing really well. It's a real pleasure to meet you. And I'm excited to talk about the tools you use because you are a true maker. And so you probably have come across quite a number of tools, and we're going to talk about kind of the cream of the crop here. So why don't you start by telling us about the RZ mask?
Sure. Yeah. So I do lots of different kinds of things, some of which are woodworking, and make a lot of sawdust, work with chemicals on occasion. And the RZ mask has been sort of a lifesaver for me because those rubber respirators that are pretty standard in shops, mm-hmm. they work great, but I find them to be super uncomfortable. And here in Baltimore, we can get some pretty hot summers, 90% humidity. Both of the wood shops I work out of didn't have air conditioning. And so it gets pretty sticky inside that respirator. So I came across the RZ mask, which is it's a cloth filtration mask. And so it has a one-way ventilation system that lets your breath out so you don't get all that condensation inside. And it's pretty comfortable to wear. And then it has filtration down to 0.1 micron, which covers pretty much the stuff that I'm working with.
Mm-hmm. So is it considered as effective as those stereotypical ones that have the kind of like little hockey puck things that are projecting out to the sides? Because this one is so much slimmer. If we were to describe it, it kind of like looks like, I don't know, maybe it's about the size of if you put your hands over your mouth. It's pretty, pretty thin. So is it really working as effectively as those more cumbersome ones?
I mean, I think so. I don't know what's happening in my lungs, but I can say from experience that I've gone in a spray booth with it and done some spray painting, and you can't smell the spray paint through it. I definitely have pretty sensitive sinuses, so when I work in the wood shop with doing any sanding, if I'm not wearing a mask, I pretty much every time will get, some type of sinus inflammation, and I haven't had any problems wearing this, so it seems to be doing the trick for what I need anyway.
And there's, I guess, you can put different filters in it, if I understand. The same basic cloth wrap on the outside, you can substitute different filters inside. Is that correct?
Yeah, they have different levels of filtration you can buy, and the filters are replaceable as you would get with the traditional respirator. And then the mask itself, there's a couple different designs based on your work conditions. So there's a cold weather mask, there's a warm weather one that has a little more ventilation. And I think they also have one for hunting. So it controls the scent, the smell of your own kind of breath, I guess, so that animals can't smell you coming. So there's a couple different options.
Cool.
Huh. It does seem to be, looks like it's a little bit more comfortable. And you say that even when it gets warm, it's not an issue with getting too warm?
Yeah, no, it's a lot more comfortable than having that rubber thing sort of suction to your face. I joke around in the wood shop here, I feel like a chicken tender because you sweat and then you coat yourself in a batter of sawdust and then sweat and repeat. So it's just, it gets really gritty and sticky inside those respirators, and this thing is a lot more comfortable to wear.
And how about the cost? How does the cost relate to, say, the traditional type? Is it more or less the same?
You're buying the mask once. I've seen them online for around $30 or $35, and it comes with a pack of filters. I think, I don't know in terms of the consumable itself, like how often the filtration change needs to happen versus your traditional respirator. But it's probably just a hair more expensive than the respirator you'd buy in the store. And then, yeah, the filtration depends on how rigorous and how many hours you're using it. So if you're, you know, in the shop for 8 hours sanding, you're going to go through those filters a lot more quickly than you would if you're just doing occasional, you know, an hour or so at a time like I am.
And this is mostly for particulates. It's not necessarily like the kind you'd use if there were like, you know, volatile chemicals.
Potentially. I mean, I think you might want something a little bit more heavy duty. It does say it's rated for dust, fumes, smoke, chemicals. And they have on their website a list of all different types of organic materials and airborne chemicals and how it's sort of rated for how it works towards each of those chemicals. So if you know what you're encountering in your particular field, you can see how it's rated for those chemicals.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, and it does look cool too. I mean, if you're wearing all day, you don't want to look like a complete, so this does look like, and you could probably even modify it not too difficultly with, your own paint job.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I don't know what that would do to the outside, but they have a whole range of colors. There's different patterns. I obviously have camo ones. I mean, if you think safety is cool, if PPE is cool, then yeah, it definitely is cooler than the big bulky respirator.
Well, what's definitely cool, I think, are these dovetail workwear pants that you are recommending. And I'm like envious. Yeah, I'm envious that they don't have them for men, or do they?
Not yet. Mm-hmm. It's a workwear pants for women company, and they've expanded their product line to have some other gear as well. But I just found them online and got a pair, and I pretty much only wear those in the shop. They are amazing.
And what makes them amazing? I mean, they're denim. Are they denim?
The pair that I have is denim. They make some other, like a cotton canvas kind of one that's a little bit more rugged, I guess. The ones that I have are really thick, stretch denim. So they're pretty rugged. The knees are reinforced. You've got two layers of fabric over the knees, but the denim has a lot of give. So you can, if you're, you know, bending down, working on different things, you can literally do squats in them and you don't lose any of your mobility. And then they're loaded with pockets, which is a big complaint I've heard a lot of women in trade say about pants, is there's never enough pockets, or they're not specialized. And these have, you can fit your whole hand in the two side pockets. They've got tool loops for, you know, for a hammer. There's a slot for a pen. They've just got everything.
Do they have overalls, or is it just pants?
No, they have overalls too. And they're doing shirts now, I think, and a couple of other things. They've been expanding their product line. So I only have one pair. And the only reason is because they've been out of stock. They're in such high demand. But I would have several pairs, likely, if they had my size in stock. But they're really great, and I like too. It's a women owned company, and their marketing is pretty great and very diverse. Lots of different trades, all different kinds of people. So I always like to see that.
Yeah, that's really great. Dovetail
Super
is the name.
Cool. I like the overalls a lot.
I have been thinking about getting a pair.
I'm a big fan of overalls. By the way, the whole thing about overalls is that they go overall. And so you wear them over your existing, it's like almost like an apron in some ways. So you want them a little bigger.
Yeah. Very cool. That's great. And they really aren't that expensive either. $99 for the denim and $89 for the canvas.
Yeah, the prices are pretty reasonable. And I mean, I haven't worn through them yet. They seem like they're going to last for a very long time.
So so you have another suggestion, your third tool. Can you tell us about that one?
Yeah, so this one was a bit tricky because they don't make the tool itself that I have anymore, but I found an alternative that seems pretty good. So I've had a Craftsman bolt-on tool probably for about 6 years now, and I use it, I think I pick that up more than anything else in the shop just because it's so versatile.
Can you describe what a bolt-on tool is, or what it looks like?
Yeah, so it's basically a drill handle. So a cordless drill, it's got, you know, comfortable handle, it's got the battery pack on the bottom. And then at the top where the drill head would go, there's an interchangeable set of tools. So you can have a drill on there, or you can pop it off and put on a trim saw or a sander or a jigsaw, and they all fit onto this one base. And so you don't have to have all the different tools. You just carry one handle and one battery, and then you've got all these attachments.
So it's using the same, is it using the same motor for all these different appliances, or are you just using the same battery and handle?
I believe the motor would be in the handle. Okay. I'm not exactly sure mechanically how it's translating that to the different attachments that you're putting on, but it works.
Okay. So you have, let's assume you have a battery and a motor and a handle, and then you put a jigsaw blade on the front of it, or you put a sanding disc, or you put a drill, or you can have a driver. And what else, besides those four, is there, do you have a chainsaw?
I don't know if it has enough kick for that, but so the one that I have, the Craftsman has, I have the drill attachment, a trim saw, and an orbital sander. The one that I can recommend, because I don't know how to say this. The Craftsman is discontinued. So you can find it on eBay. You can find different attachments and stuff on eBay. But the one that I've seen online is called the Matrix, and it's made by Black & Decker. And it's the same idea, same concept. It looks like it's pretty well received on Amazon. It's got like over 400 reviews, 4.5 stars. So it seems pretty solid. And they have they've got a drill, sander, jigsaw. There's an oscillating tool, a router, an impact driver, and then you can also, that comes in the base kit, and then you can also get a trim saw or a reciprocating saw to add to that.
If I'm not mistaken, I think Black & Decker owns Craftsman, or that they're basically the same thing.
I might have missed that merger.
Yeah, Stanley, Black & Decker, and Craftsman are all now the same company.
Ah, okay.
So maybe that's why it's just a changing of the brand.
Got it. When I bought mine, or actually it was bought for me, but when I was buying accessories for it, it was when I think Craftsman was owned by Sears, maybe?
Mm-hmm, so, right.
Yeah, I haven't been able to get any more attachments for it, but I would try out the Matrix if the bolt-on that I have ever goes out.
Is there a big cost savings by doing this, or is this more for the ease and the handiness of it that you like, or is it because it's just a lot cheaper? Or is it both of those?
I'd say both. I think when I got it, it was gifted to me about 6 years ago, and I was just kind of starting building up my arsenal of power tools. And so it was cheaper than buying each one separately, but I've since have full versions of each of those tools. And I often find myself just grabbing this because it's already charged, you know, the battery's charged up, it's super compact. So if you want to do any quick and dirty work, you know, outside or on a site, and you don't want to bring your entire set of tools, you can just pull this thing out of a, you know, out of a small tool bag, and you've got everything there. I wouldn't say it won't replace, you know, you're not going to use this instead of a full size circular saw, but to get something done real quick, just to hack something down, it's very convenient.
And there would also be an advantage to those who have really restricted spaces, like a workshop area to work in, because you're not having to store six tools. The one tool and the six heads is going to be a smaller. So for those who are in an apartment or somewhere, there's also the advantage of size.
Oh, totally. And that was me starting too. I didn't have any space to work out of, just a little area in the basement. And so storing that on a shelf was much easier than having a whole workshop full of tools.
Yeah, that's great. So the Matrix, okay. And then what's your fourth suggestion, which is maybe not an obvious one, but something very important when you're working?
Yeah, so this one is the Yongnuo 300 Air LED light. I believe that's how you pronounce it. It's a small on-camera LED light. That's what it's designed for. It's a really small panel, so it's probably only maybe like 4 by 6 inches, not much bigger than a postcard, but it's super high powered. And I've been using it to do photographs of my work. So when I'm documenting my work, it's great as a fill light or a key light for that, taking those pictures. But I've also seen it used as a shop light. Adam Savage did a really great custom build where he took a light just like this and attached it to a bendable arm that clamps to the table. And it provides really great light for your work area.
Yeah. I mean, and as I get older, I appreciate great and even light when I'm working more and more. Something like flat like this, a panel light is really good because you get a very even diffusion of that light, almost like out working outside and under the sky. And you can put it close to the thing that you're working on.
Yeah. And this one even has, there's lots of different variations out there, but I picked this one because it has two settings. You can do daylight or tungsten light, and you can actually mix them together. So if you wanted, a warmer, less harsh light, you could go with tungsten and change the color temperature, or you could do daylight. And then you can change the brightness as well. So you can dim it to whatever level is comfortable for you. And then you have also the option of two different power sources. So there's a rechargeable battery option that you can plug onto the back, or you can just plug it into a wall socket with an adapter.
So it runs off like a DC, like a 9-volt or something like this.
It runs off of it's a camera battery. So it's I believe it's a Sony, I think it's called an FPM battery, but you'd find them on
rechargeable.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So but kind of like a wall wart, some little DC adapter would probably power it if you had the right voltage for the wall. Oh, that's really cool. And you say it's really bright, meaning that I don't know, have lumens, if they have a lumens, I'm looking for a lumens. I don't see a rating, but a light bulb, bright or brighter than a light bulb?
Oh, I'd say much brighter than a light bulb. It's a soft light, so it has a built-in panel that sort of softens the light just a little bit, but it's pretty bright. I can find out how many lumens it is.
And is the warmth adjustable?
Yeah, the color temperature is adjustable.
Okay.
You're saying you had either sunlight or tungsten. So, or skylight or tungsten.
Okay. Yeah, I guess that's...
So skylight is somewhere around 5,500 and tungsten is in the 3,000s.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I'm looking for the lumens on here.
So it's all right. We'll add that later on, but, tell us about, your current project or what you're excited by these days, what you're working on or what's coming.
There's a lot of stuff in the works. What I can talk about that I'm not sworn to secrecy. There's a few We the Builders projects. So I work with a group called We the Builders that makes crowdsourced 3D printed sculptures. And what that means is we take a digital file where we scan an object, we bring that into the computer and slice it into sections. So we basically separate it into a grid. And then each of the sections is exported as a file for 3D printing. And you can go onto our website, download that file and print it at home. And then you send us the part and we collect parts for the whole sculpture. And in the end, we get, a few hundred or in some cases, a few thousand parts. We assemble them all together into the shape that we initially started with. And so there's a few of those in the works right now.
Huh. And, and your role in this is, are you kind of architecting the thing, or are you designing the process by which people are distributing the work, or what's your role in this?
It's a team of three. So I have had a couple of different roles. The last sculpture we made, I actually sculpted the original one. So I sculpted it in clay and then we scanned it. But generally, there's a web developer, Marty McGuire, and he has developed this platform to sort of assign parts to people and manage and track the parts as we receive them. And then Todd Blatt, who does a lot of the CAD work. So he's taking the file, slicing it digitally, and then saving and naming each of the part files. And then my role is somewhere in between. I'm doing some of the project management, some of the marketing, helping architect the finish piece, you know, figuring out how we're going to put an armature inside of it. So various different aspects of the process.
Yeah, I mean, I would think that would be a really crucial thing. It's just figuring out how all these pieces are going to come together and stay together and not collapse upon themselves. That must be very, very tricky engineering problem.
Yeah, we did one recently with the giant Rosie the Riveter sculpture that we made. And that one was by far the biggest we've ever constructed. It was about 6 feet tall, over 2,500 parts. And she was several hundred pounds. So if you can think about an arm of Rosie the Riveter that weighs about 200 pounds, we had to figure out how to support that when the pieces are all individual sections. So they get glued together, but inside there was a sort of a skeleton to support it.
Well, that's really cool. So if somebody wanted to, like an ordinary maker wants to participate, is this open to anybody who has the right tools?
Oh, definitely. Anyone that has a 3D printer or has access to one at a makerspace or a public library, if you go to wethebuilders.com, you can sign up for the mailing list and we will tell you when the next product is available and you can claim as many parts as you like. So if you finish one, you can print as many as, you know, up to 100 or more if you want to.
And what about like the colors? Is the end result kind of whatever colors are submitted, or does the whole thing get a coat of paint at the end?
We like to highlight the different pieces. So each project has different parameters. Sometimes it's any color you want. So we'll get a, you know, a wide rainbow of different colors. Some of them we have specified we'd like a dark color for this section or a light color for this section or red or blue. And then for the Rosie sculpture, we just specified skin tones. And so we got a whole different range of skin tones, which was really neat.
Yes, that's wonderful. Well, that's really, so we the Builder, is that correct?
We the Builders.
Yeah, okay, great. And if people wanted to find out more about what you're doing and what you're up to, where do they go?
I post a lot on Instagram. That's my probably most active social media platform. So you can follow me at Shack Attack. There's an underscore in there. Or you can check out my website, which is jenschachter.com.
Okay. Jen, I just have a quick question for you. You were talking about libraries having 3D printers. Do you know of any like resource online that lets you know about access to 3D printers and laser cutters for people who don't own one and aren't part of a makerspace? You ever heard of anything like that?
There's a couple of resources, yeah. So one for 3D printing specifically is 3D Hubs, and it's a website that will connect you with mostly individuals who own a 3D printer and basically rent out their printer for your part. So they will, you can send them your file, they'll print it on their printer, you determine the settings and the type of filament you like, and they'll mail it to you. So you pay for the print. But there's also a network that's being built currently. It's called Nation of Makers, and it's a national nonprofit that's designed to connect makerspaces around the country. And they're working on a map of makerspaces around, and through there, you'd be able to see what makerspaces are in your region and then find out what type of equipment they have.
That's really cool.
So maybe one last thing is, what kind of, are you making anything yourself or some personal project that you are working on or have been working on or have just finished that you'd like to share? Something that you thought was cool and you made?
Let's see. Well, the Rosie sculpture was the last big project I made. Mm-hmm. I do have one sort of personal project that I'm excited about. I have this sort of a problem where I get my best ideas when I'm in the shower. So I think that's a thing that happens to a lot of people. And someone suggested, oh, there's lots of different ways you can write stuff down and like write ideas in different wet conditions. And so I have this idea to make sort of a silly, sort of a serious product review in like a fisherman's raincoat, testing out different equipment that you can use to write in wet conditions. So there's things like a diving slate, or waterproof dry erase board, waterproof paper, So I'm planning to do a extensive product review, a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but a little bit informative about various different tools that you can use to write in those conditions and document it and make a video about it. So I think it'll be fun and informative.
Yeah, that's really great. That would be a lot of fun to do. And by the way, not as easy to, if you're filming in the shower, it's a lot more difficult than you can imagine, but I'm sure you'll figure that out. There was in our podcast someone who did have a suggestion for a writing tool that I think it was a he.
Yeah. Elon Lee.
Elon Lee used the Exploding Kittens, because he's a game maker, and I guess like you, he get all his great ideas in the shower, and he had a solution that really worked for him. So you might want to look at that as one of the things you want to test.
I will definitely check that out. His name is Elon Lee.
Yeah.
Okay. Elon Lee. And
it was a board and a marker, if I'm not mistaken, that he said he uses all the time every morning to write.
I'll definitely look into that. I wonder if it's similar to one of the things. I've purchased all the products. I just haven't had a chance to test them and figure out the rig. I'll probably get set up a GoPro or something, because it's waterproof, and figure out how do I document this silly review process.
Well, yeah, somebody's going to do it. Well, and I'm so glad you are. Tell us the results when you're done.
Oh, I will. I'll definitely share the video. So.
All right. Well, thanks, Jen. It's been great talking to you and learning about all the different tools that you use and stuff. And I really do recommend that people check out WeTheBuilders.com. Really cool.
Thanks so much for having me. This was a lot of fun.